Chapter 23, Hearing Voices. The messenger had become a shadow in a world of darkness, walking across the land like a true creature of the night. He thought of the conversation in the tavern. One of the men had called him a rumor.
A rumor, he thought with amusement. Let them think I am a rumor. Soon, I will become a legend.
As he walked through the blue smoke of his world, it whirled and bent itself to illustrate the surrounding trees. Fluttering sounds came from above, and he knew they were bats, predators of the night, surveying the world below for food. The bats were killers, not murderers.
We have so much in common, he thought. Murder is evil, but killing is natural and necessary. Only humans murder. How have we become so flawed? How have we strayed so far?
The messenger raised his hand and looked at it. It was framed in blue smoke with tiny wisps playing on his fingertips. He could still smell that evil man's sickening blood on his hand. He felt dirty and needed to be clean. The messenger walked south until he came to a river. The water was very cold, but it didn't matter. He needed to be clean. As the water rushed around his body, he watched it move through his ethereal vision. This was something he would never get used to. The feeling was familiar. Yet the vision of this new water was so alien, like millions of snakes slithering past him, against him, under him, over and through one another. He tried to stop them, but they always found their way around his grasp. They slipped past as if they were on their way to something of far more importance, as if he didn't even exist. The messenger closed his eyes because the vision made him feel nauseated. There were times in the beginning when his constantly moving world had made him sick. But he had gotten over it. Now only the water held that sway over him. He looked into the air, but saw no stars nor moon. The smoke didn't travel that far. The sky was always a reminder of the limits of his new vision. He wouldn't complain, though. The gifts the Holy had bestowed upon him were great, greater than he had ever imagined. The messenger found more potential in his powers each new day. The blue light came as a pleasant surprise. He had reached out one night and found he had the power to stop people in their tracks. It was helpful, though not always necessary. The messenger could run faster and jump higher than any living person. He could bend steel and splinter wood. He didn't even carry a weapon. Why should he? He was a weapon. He could put his fist straight through a man, and had. The first time it had scared him. He had looked down at his arm in horror, his mind unable to grasp what his senses were transmitting. But he had gotten used to it. He had gotten used to a lot of things. The messenger finished washing and left the water. He put his clothes back on and continued his path west. He was needed west. The Holy let him know. Communication with the Holy was not like the first encounter. It now came to him as intuition, or often as a voice in his head, though he heard the voice less now than in the beginning. In the first few days after becoming the messenger, he would spend large periods of time in conversation with the Holy. He had been very eager to learn. He wanted to know why there was so much evil in the world.
"It is the work of the ancient evils," the Holy replied. "The creatures I banished so long ago." "If they are gone, how do they still have the power to pollute the world?" the messenger asked. "Their memory pollutes the minds of men," the Holy said. "We must erase their memory."
"How can we do this?"
"You will show people what happens to those with evil in their hearts," the Holy said. "And we will ensure the ancient evils can never come back."
"They can come back?" the messenger asked. "How is this possible?"
"It is not possible, as long as we continue to lead the world away from darkness."
It all seemed so easy, yet so complicated. A deer crossed the messenger's path, but didn't notice him. He decided this would be a good opportunity to test his skills, so he picked up a twig and snapped it. The sound spooked the deer, and it ran away. The messenger watched it momentarily, giving the deer a head start before his pursuit, but once the chase began, it didn't last long. He ran alongside the deer and slapped it on the back to toy with it. The deer panicked and tried to change direction, but the messenger was still faster and cut the animal off. The deer tried another direction, but the messenger cut that path off as well. The game continued for a short time until the deer gave in. It couldn't escape. It stared at the messenger, and the man looked into its eyes. "Why is it panicked by this game?" the messenger thought. He turned and walked away from the deer. It was time to focus on his mission. The messenger had walked all night, and now the heat of the sun touched his face while the pangs of hunger stabbed his stomach. "Food," he thought. "Must I hunt? Is there a village near?" There was no village close by, and the messenger realized he would have to hunt. The western path followed the river in which he had bathed. Fish came to mind as a solution to his hunger. "When was the last time I fed on fish?" he wondered. Fed. When did I begin to call eating feeding? He found the river's edge, disrobed, and again entered the water. Within seconds, he caught a fish and ate it like a wild animal. "This fish has no taste. I wonder why." He caught another fish and ate it in the same manner. The second fish held no flavor for him either. "I'm not hungry anymore." Intuition told the messenger it was time to head south, and in order to do so, he would have to cross the river. He grabbed his clothes from the shore, tied them around his waist, and re-entered the water. His strokes were powerful and propelled him quickly across the river. Once on the other side, he finally felt the need to rest. In fact, he was having trouble remembering the last time he had. With his soaking clothes still tied around his waist, the messenger sprawled on the southern shore and immediately went to sleep. Later in the day, the jostling and clinking of a passing caravan woke the messenger from slumber. The caravan kicked up dust as it went, and the driver showed no signs of having seen a sleeping man by the river. The messenger stood and stretched, expecting to have sore muscles to work out after his exertions. However, his muscles were never sore, and that was something else he would have to get used to. He brushed the dirt from his body and dressed in clothes still slightly damp. He wondered if he might purchase food from the caravan, and decided to pursue it.
"I hate driving this caravan," Morduk thought.
The land stretched before him for what seemed like forever in all directions. He had good horses, and they pulled the wagons quickly, but not quickly enough for Morduk.
"Should have gotten bigger horses," he thought as he drank from his canteen. "They move so slow. I could probably take a nap and still be on track when I wake."
He felt something on his leg and slapped at it. Then he turned to see if it had been a fly. His attention was only diverted for a moment, but when he turned back to the road, there was suddenly someone standing right in the caravan's path. Morduk pulled back on the reins until the horses came to a stop.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Morduk yelled. He slammed his large-brimmed hat down on the seat next to him. Then he climbed from his perch and walked to the man. Morduk was as small as a child, but his bushy red beard left no question that he was a full-grown man. He yelled again as he walked out to meet the stranger, blocking his path.
"You got a death wish, do ya?"
"My apologies,"
the messenger said, and held his hands out in a sign of peace.
"I had hoped I might be able to purchase food from your caravan."
"You all alone out here?"
Morduk asked, and looked around as if waiting for someone else to appear.
"Yes," the messenger said. "I'm a traveler."
"What happened to your face?"
Morduk asked. He was short enough that the white hood the messenger used to shield his identity had little effect.
"Childhood accident," the messenger replied.
"I suppose I could sell you some food," Morduk said. "Wait here."
He walked back to the caravan and rummaged around. After a minute, he returned with a hunk of bread and two sausage links. Morduk knew no man in his right mind would pay more than 3 gold pieces for the food, but he was not the type to pass up an opportunity to swindle someone.
10 gold pieces,
he said to the messenger, expecting an argument.
"Hold out your hand," the messenger said.
Without reaching into a pocket, he dropped 10 gold pieces into Morduk's empty palm.
"What did you say your name was again?"
Morduk asked. "I didn't," the messenger answered. Morduk eyed the man suspiciously and nodded his head.
"A man after my own heart," he said. "I can respect that."
Morduk ran his stubby fingers through his beard.
"You seem to come up with those 10 pieces right quick, almost out of the air. You're some sort of magician."
"No magician, I assure you," the messenger replied.
"Where are you headed off to, then?"
Morduk asked.
"Hendrik,"
a voice said inside the messenger's head. "I travel to the village of Hendrik, if you must know," he said.
"Well, well," Morduk said with a grin. "That be the way I'm headed. I'll give you transport for 20 more gold pieces."
Morduk held his palm out, and again the messenger dropped 20 gold coins from his hand without reaching into a pocket.
"I've got a magician here, surely," Morduk thought. "Can't let him get away."
He pocketed the gold and extended his arm.
"Right this way, my friend. You'll find the back of the caravan most comfortable, I think."
The messenger climbed into the back of the caravan, and Morduk rubbed his greedy little hands together.
"Next stop, Hendrik,"
he called out as he climbed into the driver's seat. Morduk hummed a tune as the horses took off, and his beady eyes twinkled in the sun. It was a rough ride in the back of the caravan. The messenger sat with his knees tucked into his chest and meditated. He had been given a location, and now he needed a name. Images swam through his mind, and not the blue smoke images he saw through his milky eyes, but images like he used to see. He saw bears and a cave. He saw a giant feather and a stout man in a gray robe. He saw a blue crab and a golden-bladed weapon. Then he saw two faces hovering in his consciousness, and the voice came back into his mind.
"Floyd," the voice whispered. "Ben Floyd."
The messenger repeated the name in his head.
"Thomas Floyd," the voice continued. "Two targets, brothers. These men are evil, violent, and depraved. They endanger the souls of everyone on Earth. As we speak, they come closer and closer to returning an ancient evil to power. They must be stopped at all costs."
The messenger opened his eyes as the voice in his head faded away.
"At all costs."
Hours later, the caravan came to a stop.
"We must have arrived," the messenger thought.
He waited and then exited the wagon once he thought enough time had passed.
"Turn around very slowly," a voice said from behind the messenger.
He turned to find Morduk with a long knife pointed at him.
"You see, I never introduced myself proper-like,"
Morduk said maliciously.
"Morduk's the name, and your gold be my game. And I don't lose. I saw with my own eyes as you conjured gold from the air, magician. And if you'd like to be leaving with your life today, you'll be making it a third time. And old Morduk thinks it better be to the tune of 500 gold pieces."
The messenger watched blue tendrils of smoke snake across the scarred surface of the little man's face.
"You're a bandit," he said.
"And a darn good one, I'd wager. Now quit stalling."
The messenger clenched his fists, and they glowed.
"That's it, magician," Morduk said. "Get my gold."
Before Morduk knew what had happened, the messenger had kicked the knife out of his hand. Then he grabbed Morduk by the throat and lifted the man so they were face to face. Morduk's eyes grew wide as he struggled for air.
"I don't like bandits," the messenger said.
And with that, he snapped Morduk's neck. He dropped the body and turned to walk south.
"Why did you kill that man?"
the voice in his head asked.
"That man was a bandit," he said aloud in confusion. "He was evil."
Did I ask you to kill that man?
The voice asked. The messenger shook his head.
No, but was that man not evil?
Who are you to decide what is good and what is evil? Who are you to judge fate?
The messenger's mistake became clear.
I am sorry, my holy, he said. Never again will I assume to know your will. Please forgive me.
He dropped to his knees and bowed his head.
Let this be a lesson to you. I will not be so forgiving in the future. Never forget it is I who has shaped and will forever shape this world and all that walk upon it. I choose to work through you.
Yes, my holy.
The messenger stood and walked south, knowing he wouldn't need to enter the village of Hendrik. In his head, he saw the entrance to a cave, and his feet knew how to take him there.
The Floyds, he thought. I must kill the Floyds.